Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm a feminist, but I really enjoy gossiping. But I will say that when women gossip, we get called bitchy, but when a man does it, it's called a podcast. You're welcome.
I'm a feminist, but the other day I saw a really hot picture, like a staged, beautiful hot picture of Jen Brister on Instagram, and this is the exchange I had with her. You know comedian Jen Brister? She's done the Guilty Feminist a lot. She's very big right now, Jen Brister.
She's great.
She's fizzing with success. So this is the message I sent her on Instagram in the DMs. Fully thought you were Demi Moore. Turned out the picture of Jen Brister I saw wasn't Jen Brister, it was Demi Moore. I saw you and thought, Vanity Fair style shoot of female comics. I see I wasn't asked. Without looking at one other person. Then I saw Calista Flockhart and thought, well, fair play, above my pay grade, well done, Jen. Then I thought, read the names in case it isn't Jen, it's Demi Moore. That was my first thought, though. My first thought was, well, I wasn't asked. Isn't that terrible?
Oh, that's so
odd. What a terrible, terrible thing to not celebrate Jen Brister. But in my mind, do you know what, though? I did think, well done, Jen. Why wasn't I asked in one full sentence?
Okay, fine.
Do you know what I mean?
Which
it's like,
way
I didn't want to take it away from Jen. I wanted to be added in.
Which way was it, though? Was it, ah, damn, but well done?
Well, it was Jen's looking hot. So the first thing was, ooh.
Oh, okay.
Then, well done, well done. Yeah. No, genuinely. I am actually always very thrilled for other women. Mm. I don't have that thing of wanting to take it away from them.
Yeah.
I just want to be added in.
You want to be the background?
Yeah, or the foreground.
Okay.
I'm good with that.
I'm a feminist, but I hate it when people say to me after I do a set, especially women come up to me after I do a set, I talk about dirty stuff quite a lot in my sets. I swear quite a lot in my sets. I hate it when people, especially women, come up to me and go, oh, you shouldn't be saying stuff like that. You should act like a lady. And I'm like, you know what? I'm acting like a boss, okay? Let's not saying stuff like that to me, mum, okay? all the time, Deborah. She's very much like, let's not embarrass me whenever you do something. So she's not going to listen to this episode. Okay.
Are you not going to tell her about it?
No.
So it's the non-feminist part that you hide your work from your mother.
Yeah.
When you should say, Mom, look at this work. Look it in the eye. Be proud. You raised me, and here I am being feminist. Even if you don't understand it, you should be proud of me. And if you're not proud of me, I'm not going to hide it. But who's once said that to their mom?
Yeah.
Nobody's saying that to their mom.
The other problem with that, Deborah, is that how I'm also a lawyer, so she prefers that more.
So does she brag about you being a lawyer to people?
She does, and then I ended up on TV, and now it's my daughter's a lawyer, and she's also on TV. Yeah.
I will say my mum is very proud of you for being a lawyer, or she would be if she knew you. My mum would be so proud of you if you were her daughter, because all she wants really is for me to be a lawyer. She wants to be able to tell people I'm a barrister. And listen, I agree with her. I should have been a human rights barrister. We all agree that's what I should have done. However, I didn't. I'm doing this. And whenever I'm on TV in Australia, she's always like, it's not a show I watch.
I would argue that you are being a barrister. You're doing barrister work, like lawyering work. You're arguing the cases for women.
Oh, I said, yeah, I didn't realise you knew about it. It's highly illegal for me to be a barrister, but sometimes I just pop in, pop on the wig, pop on the... I just grab one. You know, lots of lawyers don't turn up now. It's not well paid anymore. And I just go in and I do say, what are we arguing about? And they say, you know, well, they say I nicked this, but I didn't. And I go in and I say, you know, and I do something like I've seen in a courtroom drama, and the judge usually says, it's Britain, you can't overrule. And then I'll tell you what, I've won 2 out of 3... And the third one, that's when they realised, and yeah.
And we have to congratulate that.
I would love to have a go at it, though. Do you ever do this as your trial, which is the improvised law game?
Yeah.
But it's not really very fair, is it, because you're an actual lawyer. Do they love that? Do they love that?
They do love it. They just,
oh my God, I can't wait to see you do that.
When they tried to get me out quite on in Edinburgh, and I kind of was like, this is my day job. I don't really want to do it as, like, my side job as well.
You and I should do it together. It'd be so fun. I'll do one against you and I will happily lose to you, but no one else. I'm a feminist, but I continued. Then I thought, read the names, in case it isn't Jen, it's Demi Moore. I continued, that's how hot you are. You could have married Bruce Willis and shacked up with Ashton Kutcher. Are everybody's DMs as unfeminist as mine? Because I feel like some of you are responding like, this is not what we're expecting from you. But I feel if all our WhatsApps were released on the same day to the public, we'd all be cancelled at the same time in every direction. So I said to her, you could have married Bruce Willis and shacked up with Ashton Kutcher. Jen's a lesbian. Why would she want that? It's not clear. Also, how does Demi Moore still look so good? She's 61. And then I've just put loads of dollar signs. And then I've put, this has been a feminist public service announcement. Kiss, kiss, kiss. Jen wrote, ha, I do not look anything like Demi Moore. That woman is too fire. But she's put flame, like the flameo emoticon.
The flame emoji, yeah.
Yeah. But I appreciate this much needed compliment as I watch my face headed steadily south. 61, for fuck's sake. Same with Sandra Bullock, 59. Insane. These women have made a deal with the devil. This is getting into Jen Brister's a feminist butt territory here. Imagine if that was me, Calista Flockhart and Khloe Kardashian would be like, who is this lesbian? I reply, I fully, 100% thought it was you. Jen Brister wrote, I love you for that. And then a kissing emoji. I wrote, people always talk about how beautiful you are. Okay, probably gets into the territory I shouldn't read out now.
I think that's quite nice, actually.
It is quite nice, but we were writing about how much they must spend on their faces, and Jen thought that they'd spent so much they'd done a deal with the devil.
I think you're probably right, because obviously they've got so much money. Mm. But I was looking at Jennifer Lopez the other day, because obviously she's got her new album out. You all know Jennifer Lopez, right? Got a new album, new movie, documentary. She's back with Ben. She's feeling like herself. But she's like 52 and she looks amazing. There's no one else shocked about this. She looks amazing and I'm so jealous. But I also was like, is it because you're Latin or is it because you've had money and got work done?
I think it's a combination of genes and cash. Mm. The thing is, if you could afford to have someone come to your house in the morning, wake you up, do yoga with you,
Then someone else comes and does personal training, and your personal chef brings you some macrobiotically balanced breakfast. If your job is that, and you can spend 75 grand a year on a personal chef, and also you can have every, you know, one of those those things where they poke and prod your face without actually, you know, cutting it open. Of course you're going to look like that. Also, if you've got J-Lo jeans.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have J-Lo jeans to begin with. My jeans are okay. I think they're pretty good. They're okay. But nobody gets me out of bed to do yoga in the morning. And I think that's the real problem. No paid staff come and say, right, you have to get on the treadmill for an hour and I'm not letting you off because you've paid me not to let you off.
But if someone came up to you at like 7 o'clock in the morning and was like, hey, it's time for you to come and do yoga now, come out of that sleep, would you be like, okay, you know what, someone's making me do it, or would you just be like, elbow in the head?
I think if I were J-Lo, because J-Lo, the whole thing about J-Lo is she has got this absolute ambition and she's like targeted on what she wants. Mm. So if I were J-Lo, yes, I would get out of bed. Am I J-Lo? No. So obviously not. Obviously not.
All I really want is someone just to like lift up my boobs. That's all I really want.
I mean, I can do it.
Okay. Like, I'm a feminist, but I can't help but smile when I see a man confidently rocking a pink floral shirt. Real men can wear whatever they want to and they wear it damn well. The reason why I say this is because I was in Leicester on the weekend and a very good friend of mine, we went to a gay club, very good friend of mine, I really fancied someone in the club, and approached them, and the person that they approached basically turned and said to them, I don't think we're going to be a good suit because you're too feminine.
Oh.
And I kind of was like, fair, okay. And then we had this weird discussion about preference, which is okay because people think I have a preference about dating white people. It's not true. It's just that there's more of you lot.
It's a numbers game.
Yeah. So, yeah. So yeah. I wrote that one for my friend. There you go.
All right. I have to skip a bit of what I wrote to Jen because I can't read you everything.
I'm so intrigued.
But I will finish it off. I said, people always talk about how beautiful you are. I don't know if you know that, but they do. She said, like most women our age, I cannot take a compliment. I answered, try me. I'll take whatever I can get at this point. She wrote, you are an hilarious, inspirational, intellectual, cerebral, kind, empathetic, beautiful, towering tour de force. I replied, but am I fuckable? She wrote, yes, of course you are, but you're also not necessarily the most approachable woman. I think you intimidate without realizing. I wrote, too tall and operating on a high frequency energy. Well, to be honest, I'm more into making things than shagging people right now. It's more exciting. She wrote, I've forgotten what shagging is. I think making stuff sounds great. And I essentially wrote, it's the same impulse. You can be titillated by a breakthrough in a writer's room. She didn't write back. At that point, now maybe she just got distracted, or maybe she was so aroused by the idea of the writer's room, it's not clear, or maybe she thought, okay, we're not on the same wavelength at all if you can get sexually excited by a writer's room. I'm not sexually excited by a writer's room, just to be clear, Sakisa.
Whatever turns you on, babe, whatever
no,
turns
it's
you
not,
on.
No, it's more the sort of, do you know what I mean? Like, you know, that kind of like, it's her, we're making up the story. You know, you have a story breakthrough. It's a similar impulse to being titillated for me. It's not, I'm not sexually titillated, but there's a similar tingling that goes on. Do you see what I mean? Does anyone else get this for the creative work? Does anyone else get a similar, am I the only person in the world who finds making stuff a bit horny? No. It's not actual sexual arousal, but it's more like it's the same like heart racing. Some people are nodding, but cowardly, too cowardly to say yes. I do. Yes, thank you.
I think when people applaud in a, like a comedy setting, that maybe turns you on as well.
I don't get turned on by applause.
Okay,
I actually find bowing at the end of a show a little bit awkward. I want it to be over. And it's weird, isn't it? As a performer, you would think I would like it. But when I've had to do shows where I've had to bow at the end...
When you
did it? Yeah, like a gymnast or something.
Yeah.
I'm like, when I see actors, like at the National Theatre, jog out like they've done a marathon, and then they just let themselves go and they just sort of fall forward like, oh, Oh, like they've run a marathon. I'm so embarrassed for them. I'm just like, mate, it was a bit of Chekhov. There was a lot pausing, standing around, looking wistfully into the middle distance. Why are you sweating and huffing and looking like you need a long massage? Like, seriously now. Some shows are very physical, but a lot of them aren't. And there's still a lot of, oh, I've given my all. I just, whenever I watch Chekhov anyway, I've got a real problem. I'm just like, I know he writes for women well and, you know, all of that. And there's three sisters and everything. Yay, well done, man, writing when women couldn't write about three sisters. Lovely work. Love it. Pleased. I'm pleased for you. I'm thrilled for you. Don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. But also, fucking hell, I'm just going to go on EasyJet and get you a ticket to Moscow. Fucking hell. If they say they want to go to Moscow one more time, I'm always just like, want to look it up on Travelocity and go, you know you can do it. £27. £27, you can get to Moscow. I'll get you tickets to Moscow. That's how I always feel when I watch Chekhov. They're always just banging on about going to Moscow and they never fucking go. I know that's the point.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
That is the, I've heard the fucking point.
You're like, it's done, over, fucking go.
Oh, I mean, I'm thrilled he wrote all those plays. Thrilled, thrilled. But don't ask me to watch them unless you're in them. I'll go for a mate. If a mate's in a Chekhov, I'll go. But other than that, I've seen them.
You know what? I've never seen a Chekhov.
I'll take you next time.
No, it's okay. You've sold it. No, you sold it so well.
I've sold it so well. Live from King's Place in London, the Spotted Ale Shop presents the Guilty Burgers with me, and Princess Wife. Yes, guys, these are our very special guests. We're making lunch. We're talking about the word hunting. Hello, 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 hello. Thank you so much for coming out on a Monday night for feminism. That's right, you're kicking the week off right by kicking the patriarchy where it hurts. Just give us a cheer if you've done anything to smash the patriarchy since January the 1st. Excellent. Do you mind saying what it is? No, probably I shouldn't do that, should I? Because then people won't want to cheer anymore if I point to people and go, what? What have you done? Account for yourself. How rude. How rude. I'm sure you have. Would you like to tell us about it, or I can get someone else? You would. Excellent. You know what? I sensed you would. You were sitting in the front row. You're making direct eye contact. So really, whose fault is this? What's your name?
I'm Lauren.
Lauren. Lauren. So you sound North American. Is that right?
Australian.
Oh, you're Australian. Hello, so am I. Oh, that's so nice.
I've seen you before.
You've seen me before? Excellent. Lauren, have I seen you before? Or was it a one-way sighting?
I used to teach your niece, actually.
You used to teach my niece? Yeah. This has taken a turn. Wow. Well, hold on a minute. Did you teach my niece deliberately? Did you find her in a crowd and say, I'd like to teach you some things so you could get to me? Or is this a total coincidence?
It was a pure coincidence.
Pure coincidence.
I was telling them, you know, the young women of the future, that I was going to see someone talking about feminism.
Yes.
And she came up to me after class and she said, I think that's my aunt.
That is so bizarre, because I did not have any nieces in Brisbane.
Some girl in Brisbane is telling
people. Can you tell me?
She knew your name.
I've got a niece in Auckland. I've got one who's just moved to Sydney. I've got one in another part of New Zealand. I'm just trying to think. I've got one in Scotland.
You've got poor lass in Brisbane saying she's your
niece. No, I think I might know who it is. Can you say the name?
Kate.
Oh.
Who are you thinking?
No. Niece. You sure it's not a cousin or like a daughter of a cousin or what's, do you know her mum's name?
No.
No, okay. Okay, well, I don't know who that is, but I think it might be my cousin's daughter. How old is she?
Right now, she would be 15.
Right, I'm definitely asking about right now. Yeah.
This 15. Was a few years ago, 15 now?
She'd be 15 now.
Yeah, or this year, yeah.
It could be, or it could be someone just masquerading as my niece.
It'd be quite
which
impressive.
I find intriguing. Because if I were going to masquerade as someone's niece, I'd like pick someone like Sharon Stone. I have to say I'm flattered. If this is somebody just being like, yeah, I know her. I'm related. How? My mum is her sister. Unless I have a secret niece I don't know about, which is highly possible, because I don't know anything about my biological father's side of the family, and they're all from Brisbane. Maybe they found me. is so exciting. Hold on. Exactly what did she look like? I'm going to need every... Do you know what? Because I've just been thinking, I've got to do 23andMe, which you're not meant to do because they get all your data. But to be honest, they've got all your data anyway. They know where my phone is. So fuck it. Because I want to find that side of the family. And the thing is...
I may have found them.
Oh, my God, Lauren, that'd be so exciting. I want to do 23andMe. But in Australia, I think more people do the Ancestry.com gene one, don't they? So I think I have to do both of those and then roll the dice. The reason it's so exciting on the other side, because many of you will know I found my biological mother 10 years ago. But the reason it's so exciting on the other side is she didn't tell him she was pregnant. So can you imagine his married face when I knock on the door and go, hello, I've brought a paternity test. I don't want to assume your gender, but are you a man and are you laughing out of fear? Because it sounded like a really scared laugh. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Are you one of those men when people say, have you got any children? And you go, not that I know of. Because I am the punchline of that joke. Here I am, not that I know of. Wow. So this is a few years ago, so she would have been 12.
Yeah, 12, 13.
Wow. And did she seem pleased to be related to me at least?
She was very excited.
Oh, that's so sweet. Well, whether or not she's related to me, I am thrilled by this entire interaction. And you are a hardworking teacher.
Yes.
You are a teacher.
Yes.
Yes, excellent. Do you teach now in the UK?
I do.
And have you brought any of your students to see The Guilty Feminist here?
No, I haven't.
Why?
I'm so sorry.
What? How old are they?
They are range between 11 and 14.
Oh, that would be perfect. We could do a sort of adolescent. What kind of school is it?
How do we explain it?
Well, is it a comprehensive...
Yeah, it's comprehensive.
...that needs some feminist...
Oh, they need some feminist.
They need some feminist?
Yeah.
They do. They need some feminist oomphing. Are they local?
Yeah, they're in Hackney.
They're in Hackney. Great, okay.
Do you want to come out?
I mean... It's very difficult for me to say no now, isn't it? Because these people are looking at me and going, so you say you're a feminist. The tables have turned, Lauren, haven't they? When I leered over and went, leered, I didn't leer. When I leaned over and went, so Lauren, what have you done to smash the patriarchy? Lauren is now looking me dead in the eye in front of a large crowd that could so quickly turn into a baying mob. And it's a Monday night, it's London, they've had a few drinks. And saying, so, do you want to come to Hackney and talk to some children that get no feminism from the government? I would love to. I'd love to. Yeah. Do you find it increasingly underfunded, you know, teaching in the UK in a
comprehensive
school?
Absolutely.
Is there anything else you need, then, in that case, that we could get from here? Because these people are, you know, eager... Feminist, engaged. They all almost judged me for a second for thinking about not going to Hackney. So now it's going to be really difficult for them to say no to you. So
I
this
will
is your
say,
moment.
It is an academy, so we're not as underfunded as other schools. So funnel your money into other comprehensives that aren't academies.
Okay. So they're applauding that. They're applauding that. So academies are where, is it when the parents pay?
No,
it's not like a private school, but it's like a
has decided he wants his name on a school.
Oh, like the old Victorian patronising model. The patron of the school is.
Yeah, very much so.
A rich man. I remember when it happened, Blair started this, didn't he? Where he said local people could all chip in for a school because why would the government want to bother? Education, education, education. I remember that. It was a very odd move on his part. But he did make some odd moves over the years, didn't he? To say the least. Some of those odd moves, some of the more odd moves were war crimes. But anyway, let's not dwell on that. Let's not dwell entirely on that, Lauren. Did you come and see the show in Brisbane?
Yes, I did.
That's just wonderful news. And thank you so much for finding me again here. That's really lovely. I say finding me like I'm on the Witness Relocation Programme. I do a series of public events and shows. So thank you so much. Lauren, can you tell us the most feminist thing about teaching before you sit down?
Well, I teach about gender and sexuality to 14-year-olds who don't want to be in the room.
Well done. Do you teach boys as well?
Yes, I do.
Oh, this is important. Okay, so can I teach the boys as well if I come and
please?
You looked really quite desperate there. That's...
It was shocking. I've never taught boys before, so it was very shocking their understanding of feminism, but also toxic masculinity. They think male gender stereotypes are really good for them. So that was really sad.
Well, do you mean like the Andrew Tate types?
Yes.
Yeah.
He's their idol.
Interestingly, I went and taught boys in a comprehensive school. I mean, to teach. I just sort of had a discussion circle some years ago on this podcast. Everything has changed since then. They were really open to it. They had a really pretty good understanding of what feminism was. They were actually really, really lovely. But I don't know if you saw it, but there's a recent study, and I've agreed to talk to the academic about it because I'm writing a book and I wanted to talk to her about it. There's a bunch of academics working on it. This generation, Generation Z, is dividing. This is the first generation in history where the generation hasn't gone forward as one. So generations have been, in the main, getting more progressive, as unsurprisingly, over the years. So people are more progressive generally in their views than their grandparents. This is the first generation that's not moving like a generation. The girls are going left and getting more progressive quite dramatically. And the boys, as a trend, and this is, of course, not all girls and not all boys, and there are non-binary kids as well, so, you know, just taking this into account as a trend, this is a trend, the boys are getting more right-wing and they're getting radicalised. If you haven't listened to this podcast called Rabbit Holes, it's a New York Times podcast, it's really, really interesting about how people get radicalised on the internet. But it's the first generation now where boys are less progressive on many things, like feminism and immigration, than their grandfathers. Yeah, it's quite scary. So we need to do something about it. And it's not about, you know, it's just about what you find for yourself on the internet. And it's a lot of boys are being radicalized through, they start with self-help videos and the algorithm quickly takes them further and further right. But interestingly, if you go looking for right-wing stuff, it shifts you far right or alt-right very quickly. If you go looking for left-wing stuff, not so. This is what all the latest research and studies are saying. I'm reading a lot of this stuff at the moment because I'm writing a book and it's really, really interesting. So on that basis, even more so, I'll come to Hackney. A big round of applause for Lauren, everybody! Thank you so much. Well, I normally talk to a few people, but we only needed Lauren. Are we ready to start the show? Give us a cheer if you listen to The Guilty Feminist at home. Give us a cheer if you don't know what you're at. Okay, notice how those cheers are less empowered. Less feminist, if you will. It's a podcast, and if you don't know what a podcast is, it's radio that nobody stops you making, and that's why women do it so often. So, it's a recording. If you do a laugh, you'll be able to hear it when you listen to it later. Wherever you get your podcasts, and don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe, because it helps more people rate, review, and subscribe or something. That's really all you need to know. It's a funny podcast about feminism. And I will tell you what our lineup is tonight after we have brought on my co-pilot for this evening. She's an absolutely brilliant and hysterical comedian. She's all over the telly. Put your hands together and make extraordinary woohooing noises for the wonderful Sakisa! Thank you, Sakisa. That's Lauren in the front row. She teaches my niece.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
How is that?
We don't know if she's really her niece.
We've done some digging. I think it might be my cousin's child, which is a sort of, I don't know, what does that make me?
Family?
Yeah. I think it's a second cousin. I think she might be my second cousin, but niece sounds cooler.
Yes, niece sounds cooler. But also, I feel like you're just here to be famous. I like you. Well done.
Mission accomplished if that was the case. I don't know how many gender studies teachers are struggling to be famous. I feel like that's an accusation that could be levelled at both of us, but not at all this hardworking teacher who has to teach 14-year-old boys about gender studies.
I love you for that. Well done.
Yes,
that should be a reality TV show, and I would love to see that. How are you?
I love the way you just turned that into a reality TV show. I'm very well, Sakisa. How are you?
I'm good, thank you very much. I'm very excited to be here. Hello, everyone. Hey! Happy to bring the party. Yay.
I'm so excited to crack on with the show. First of all, we're going to do the opening titles. So I'm going to say live from King's Place in London. You're going to break into spontaneous applause. As if you just heard, oh my God, live, London, we're so thrilled to be here. And you just like, woo, like that. Sakisa will then bring you to a climax using only her hands. While I say where we are and who, you won't hear this, but you'll hear it when you listen at home. She'll be able to hear the last word that I say, and then Sakisa will bring you down gently down the other side, okay? Our editor tells us that it's better for him if you trail off your applause rather than bringing it to a dead stop. So if you are interested in making the life of a white straight cis man easier, you go right ahead.
Make it sexy, everyone. Make it sexy today.
Great. Great advice. Ready? This is The Guilty Feminist, the podcast in which we explore our noble goals as 21st century feminists and the hypocrisies and insecurities which undermine them. I'm Deborah Frances White, with me is Sakisa, and we're talking about the word cunt. Now, unusual, but we have an expert, a senior lecturer in philosophy at Royal Holloway University of London, and she has a book about swearing, and she wants to talk tonight about reclaiming the word cunt and what it means, the origins, why it's seen as extremely offensive, etc., etc., which is exciting.
It's very exciting. I do love to use the word cunt. Why is that funny when I say it and not when Deborah says it?
I think I've... what they've read on me, that my awkwardness has seeped out on them. Your confidence has made it funny. Me, they're like, oh, she's swallowing that. So to speak. Swallowing the word.
Swallowing the word. I don't know if it's because I've just had a... I think we just need to... I like to reclaim the word, so it would be nice to talk about it later on.
Yeah.
I feel like the word has been, like, used against women for several years, and it's an abuse kind of... I don't know why I'm doing this. I'm pointing my fingers out like guns. I don't know why. Yeah. So South London, it's coming out of me. But I just feel like it's time for us to start reclaiming back certain words, especially when we talk about this day and age.
Yeah.
So cunt is a good one.
Bitch pronounced biatch, I enjoy.
Biatch!
Yeah, really enjoy it. Really enjoy it. And I kind of feel like I'm allowed to use it. I mean, obviously, as long as I'm using it. It's all, a lot of it's tone, isn't it?
Yeah, it's about the way that you use it and the context that you use it. Biatch! Yeah. It doesn't really work for me. It works with you better than it. See, that we swap words.
Yes. I can make pH funny.
Yeah.
And you can make...
cunt.
Funny.
Hello, it's Abigailia Shaman, sometimes co-host of Guilty Feminist and winner of Pointless Celebrities, but who's counting? I have some amazing news for you. Global Pillage is coming back, baby. We will be performing Thursday, May 9th, and Monday, June 17th, 7:30 p.m. at King's Place. I am the new host, and we have an amazing panel for you. But what we need is you. You, we need you, the hive mind, to come to the show. So you can get tickets at kingsplace.co.uk. Remember, the shows are May 9th, June 17th, 7:30 p.m. at King's Place. I'll see you there.
It's time for you to do some stand-up comedy. Are you ready?
Oh, yes. Are you ready?
Yeah. Would you like to see Sakisa do some stand-up comedy? Yeah. Then put your hands together and make incredible white noises for Sakisa!
Hello. Hi. Are we well? Sexy. I did mention at the start of that I really enjoy gossiping. That's why I want to be a bit more honest in 2024. I would tell people nowadays that I really enjoy gossiping. It's one of my favourite things to do. This is why history was my favourite lesson in school, because it was full of gossip. For example, Henry VIII changed Christianity as we know it, but the reasons why, ooh! Because you wanted to cheat on your wife, ooh! Because he divorced two, he beheaded two. The one actually was in love with died during childbirth, and he was survived by one. He's the Ian Bill of history, and I fucking love that. But I am one of those people that has text messages on the phone from friends from 3 weeks ago being like, hey, Sakisa, are you okay? And I've just not responded. But as soon as someone messaged me, guess what? I'm fucking calling you from the toilet, yeah? Yes, I'm doing a poo right now, but I want to hear the gossip. Tell me, yes. We enjoying 2024? Okay, most people are not. Okay, cool. I've enjoyed it so far because it's been better than it has been at the start of 2023. 2023 was very interesting for me. It had lots of ups and downs, mostly downs. But it got interesting for me at the beginning of the year because I got diagnosed as being dyslexic. That's interesting for me because I'm halfway through my life. I'm not going to tell you how old I am, but I'm halfway through my life. And to be diagnosed as dyslexic halfway through your life is probably the most useless information I have ever had. What am I going to do with this information? I can't get a free laptop now. I can't get more time. Like, what the fuck, yeah? And whoever made the word dyslexia, fuck them, okay? There's an X in it, there's a Y. Why would you do that to us? Think there's a Q in there somewhere? I don't know. But since being diagnosed as being dyslexic, I've been thinking about words. Words is a very interesting thing for me to think about because even the simple things that people say to you on a day-to-day basis that they think is a compliment, I take in a very different way. Now, when people say to me, oh, you look pretty today. Today. Well, I'm to yesterday, bitch. Like, what the fuck, okay? I got called the ultimate compliment the other day. I got called a MILF. Any MILFs in? Okay, you own your shit, yes. If you don't know what a MILF is, it means mother, I would like to fuck. Got called the MILF the other day, which will be the ultimate compliment if I have fucking kids! And I literally shout at the man, I don't have any kids. The man was like, you look like you've got kids. What does that mean? I've got no idea what that means. I don't have any kids. I have got sis got children, though, and they're all gorgeous. The youngest one is 6 months old. She's gorgeous. Chubby cheeks. I could eat her alive. The oldest one is 11 years old. She's a bitch. She is, okay? She watches me quite a lot on YouTube and Instagram and stuff like that because that's her generation. And she said to me the other day, oh, Sakisa, with all this entertainment business stuff that you're doing, when do I get to meet Idris? And I was like, Idris who? And she was like, Idris Elba. And I was like, what the fuck are you going to do when you meet Idris Elba, yeah? Because I know what I'm doing when I meet Idris Elba, yeah? Idris is getting fucked. Ugh. But I realised she was a bitch when she was about 7 years old. I had to pick her up from school, and I got called into the head teacher's office, which I didn't know could happen when you're in your 30s. And I walked in there and I was like, hey, what's going on? And the man was like, oh, Renee's in trouble. And I was like, okay, why is Renee in trouble? And he was like, Renee's in trouble because she punched the boy in the face. And I was like, oh, Renee, why are you punching boys in faces? And she said, this little boy wants to play Kiss Chase. Now, we all know the game Kiss Chase? No? If you don't know what it is, it's normally when little boys chase little girls around the playground and they aim to kiss them. It's basically a game that shows men about consent. And she said she didn't want to play Kiss Chase, so she walked off and this little boy dragged her back and was like, no, you've got to play Kiss Chase. So she punched the boy in the face. Now, I said to the head teacher, I'm really sorry. Me and my family don't tolerate violence, even though we're from South London. However, that boy's probably been a little bit of a cunt, so I'm going to take her to McDonald's, okay? What would you like today? A Big Mac meal? Yes, you've been good. I think the main reason why I don't have kids is because I do a lot of things in my life. I am a stand-up comic. I do this full-time. I'm lucky to be able to do this job. I love this job so much. I also am an immigration lawyer. That is a true story. So if anyone still needs that British passport, still come find me. I've still got four in my drawer. They're £100 each, okay? Actually, there's £200. There's a cost of living crisis going on, okay? But I also am an international award-winning burlesque performer. You ain't paid enough to see it. You ain't paid enough, no. It's interesting when people hear I do stand-up comedy and burlesque because they say to me, have you ever combined the two things together? And I'm like, yes, that's what I want to be doing. It's just taking off my clothes while people laugh at me. That's going to make me feel really sexy and comfortable about my life, okay? But if it comes to dating, this is the other reason why I am single as well, because I do a lot of things in my life. I'm too busy. But being single in this day and age is really hard. Everything's on the dating apps, and I hate the dating apps. The dating apps for me, since being diagnosed with dyslexia, are more like a creative writing course. Because you're going to be so many things on the dating apps. You're going to be sexy, you're going to be funny, you're going to be smart, you're going to be white, you're going to be so many things on the dating apps. I slipped that in. Ay. But I'll tell you what, it's not even like I'm very picky with who I date. I'm very open with who I date. Like, I dated this guy once who was really, really posh. I say really, really posh, I met him in Camden in London, like really, really posh. Like I said to him one day, yo, blood, and he was like, where? That's how posh he was. But the first time we had sex, his personality completely changed. It was 5 o'clock in the morning, he was coming through the door with a bucket of chicken, baggy trousers on, fitted cap on, and I was like, where are you coming from? He was like, yo, 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 bop to the shop, golden wonder, what flavour? Salt and vinegar, cook from my brother, flake from my sister, 10 BH and a packet of Rizla, dash out the shop, all in the Zender, kick him in the teeth and pay him later, because I got a tick on my new night trainer. I was like, I'm not dating white people anymore, no. Stand up, Dan, yay! Thank you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Guilty Feminists. This is Deborah. Our tour down under begins, and we can announce our amazing co-hosts for these shows on the 11th of May in Auckland, the 14th of May in Wellington, and the 15th of May in Christchurch. I am going to be co-hosting for the first time with the incredible stand-up comedian from Aotearoa, Michelle Acourt. I know she's huge in New Zealand and a massive feminist, and I'm very, very excited. We tried to work with her before, and her daughter very inconveniently gave birth that night. I can't think of a more feminist reason not to come. So we're very, very excited. Then we'll be in Adelaide on the 18th of May with Geraldine Hickey. After that, we're coming to you, Perth, on the 20th of May with Claire Hooper. Then we'll be in Sydney on the 23rd of May with Geraldine Hickey. And then we'll be in Melbourne on the 25th of May. I am not allowed to say who the co-host is, but she is a big Australian favourite and she's amazing. I am not allowed to announce her yet because she's so famous and fabulous. And the guest is an A-list Australian star. Again, we're just getting permission to announce her. So I would recommend if you're in Melbourne especially, our tickets are going fast everywhere, but I would recommend if you're in Melbourne especially, you get your tickets now before the announcement is made because you are going to want to see these people. And we also have some incredible activist voices and other special stuff going on. The last two dates are in Brisbane on the 27th of May with the wonderful Alice Fraser and in Canberra on 28th of May. We end the tour with Kirsty Wiebeck. Grace Petrie is coming out and she's doing all the dates with me. We're also going to have poets, activists, incredible guests. It's going to be, do you remember how buzzy the tour was last time and everyone was hysterical at the end? It's going to be like that again. So do not miss out. Get tickets now at guiltyfeminist.com and click on live shows. You can also get an ad-free version of the podcast from Patreon, Apple Podcasts or Acast Plus from as little as £2.50 a month. And that really helps to support the podcast and pay all the wonderful people who support me in bringing you The Guilty Feminist every week. You can also show support in a way that costs you nothing by going to Apple Podcasts or Spotify and giving The Guilty Feminist a 5-star review, even though you've done it before, because it really, really helps other people find us in a very crowded market with a weird algorithm pushing people further to alt-right content every week. And so we'd really, really love it if you'd tell people about it, share it online. And now back to the podcast.
Our guest today is Senior Lecturer in Philosophy at Royal Holloway, University of London. Her podcast, The Academic Imperfectionist, draws on philosophy to deal with things like self-doubt and procrastination. And her latest book, For Fuck's Sake, Why Swearing is Shocking, Rude and Fun, that's the full title, is out now. Please welcome to the stage the incredible Rebecca Roche. Rebecca, thank you so, so much for joining us. It's wonderful to have you. How did you get into swearing? Like, what, as an academic, I mean, was it the cuts to funding or, like, what gave you such an interest as a linguist in swearing?
I was supposed to be working on something else. I'm very good at starting projects, less good at...
Oh, me too, ADHD. Yeah.
Yes, I'm a Gemini.
Do you?
Yes, absolutely. I'm a Gemini, so I never finish what I start.
Yeah, I came across a news report about a predatory journal, which rarely make the news, but they claim to be academic journals, and they have quite lofty-sounding titles, but they actually just solicit articles from academics and get them to pay so that they can publish them, and they're generally not very selective. So they're kind of money-making rackets. And one of them made the news because they had accepted a paper which was entitled Get Me Off Your Fucking Mailing List. Ah. And just that the entire text was made up of that repeated. And it was formatted like an academic journal.
Fantastic.
So this made the news, but
what and they hadn't noticed. They just published it.
Publish it because the authors didn't pay the publication fee, but they accepted it.
Right.
It was by a couple of computer scientists in the US.
Who knew? Yeah.
But what was interesting was that in the news report, at least the one I read, the front page of this article formed the picture. So you could tell they were sort of fucking all over the place. But in the headline, they gave the title of the paper with the some of the words in fucking replaced by asterisks.
Yeah.
So I was thinking that's weird how we do that.
Yeah.
You know, because it does seem to work when you replace asterisks in swear words that it somehow makes them less offensive. Mm. But you can still see what the swear word is, and you know that. It's kind of like usually we want to communicate the swear word. So I started looking into thinking like probably some philosopher has written about this. I'll see what they say. And nobody had. So then that became my new project.
Wow, fantastic.
And then I just kind of got into all the other little corners of swearing along the way too.
If you're listening at home, by the way, I probably should have said, if you're listening with a child in the car, this episode... I should have said ages ago, because we started with the C word. So just all I can say is sorry, you've probably turned off by now. Don't know what to tell you. But why is it that what's the reason that any words are taboo in any language? Like if we just philosophically look at it, what is the point of taboo words? And why do we take a word like for a sexual body part or the act of sex or something like that? And why don't we just say fiffle if we... hit our hand with a hammer. Why do we take this other word that's taboo in some way that we cover our private parts or we don't have sex in public or whatever? Why do we take that and we bring it out and we put that on the table? What's the origin of it?
Yeah. So, I mean, you kind of touched on it a little bit there. Of course, there are plenty of taboos that are linguistic, like swearing, but there's lots of non-linguistic taboos as well. So, yes, having sex in public... defecating in public, et cetera, et cetera. People have looked into this, and it turns out that there's some harm at the root of it, or there's a worry about harm. So, you know, we don't defecate in public because there's a risk of, well, it's unhygienic. Mm. You don't have sex with your siblings because there's a... Well, actually, that's kind of an interesting story, but, you know,
unless
to
you're
cut it short, there's...
Well, not where I thought we were going to go.
Well, I was going to say, unless you're in Devon, so...
If you're listening in Devon, we love you and we'll come to you on tour soon. We don't think that. That was a joke. We don't think that. So here's an interesting thing is we could say, oh my God, I'm going to kill you if you do that again. You know, someone like taps you on the shoulder and surprises you. Don't do that. Oh my God, I nearly died. I'm going to kill you. Right. That's to me, death and killing are the worst taboos. You could say, you know, what was it like in the symposium this afternoon? Oh my God, it was murder. It was a nightmare. It's torture. Death by PowerPoint. Or, do you see what I mean? Like, why are words like death and torture not taboo and killing not taboo? But we say, oh, he was, you know, it's a bit of jolly British slang. It was so fun. It was killing. Like, why are those words not taboo?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Fucking, which is, let's be honest, where we've all come from.
Yeah.
Or nearly all of us, until we, you know, came up with IVF.
Yeah.
We've all come from fucking.
We all came from sperm and fucking. And it's, I think, I don't know how you answering the question is... Not for me, I'm not going to answer the question, but I just wanted to say, in terms of, on top of that, do you think that swearing is a bit like guilty pleasure for some people? Where it's like Rick Astley's song, Never Gonna Give You Up. Is it like kind of that, we love to say it, but at the same time we know it's wrong, a bit risque?
Yeah, well, I mean, the fact that we know it's wrong is what gives it its appeal, right? That we... It's the breaking of taboo. Mm. So, you know, kids, like, you know, we don't, as parents, tend to teach them. We don't school them in swear words. If anything, we might kind of try to protect them from swear words. But, you know, obviously they're going to kind of learn it in the end.
Yeah, children pretend they don't swear in front of their parents and parents pretend they don't swear in front of their children and everybody's happy. And that's interesting, even though you know your parents probably do swear sometimes and they know the children probably do swear sometimes and just don't swear in front of me. Where's it all come from, and why do you know why it's okay to say, "Oh, I nearly died," but it's not okay as a sort of linguistic metaphor?
Yeah,
but it's not okay to say, "Oh my God, I was totally fucked," you know, like in front of your gran. Why?
Well, I think so. This has to do, I think, not so much with the words you're using, but with what you're trying to convey with the words we use. So, if you swear in front of your gran. I mean, I'm assuming you don't. That's why you used that example.
She's dead now. So but if I never would have.
Right,
when she
right.
Was with
so, you know, being with your gran, that was a context where swearing was inappropriate.
Yeah, some people do, because people have sweary families. But
a lot of different rules apply.
A lot of people who are quite sweary wouldn't swear in front of their gran. So let's take that. I'm quite sweary now, but I wouldn't swear in front of my gran.
Right.
Well, I mean, I guess if she came back from the dead, I might say fuck me or something like that. But take
well, you
that,
say that
involuntarily.
You say that. My mum's favourite word is cunt.
Is it?
My mum's favourite word
is... Does she say it in front of you?
She says it in front of me all the time. That's her favourite word is cunt.
I mean, I would love to have that kind of relationship with a parent, but never will. But we all, nearly all of us came out of one.
Yeah, exactly.
Didn't we?
Most of us. Yeah.
We came from fucking and the cunt.
That's right. So why, to say, if you say, oh, even if you're not talking about a person, if you're talking about a person, it can be very hostile. But if you're talking about the tyre's flat tyre, if I have a flat tyre, I would very likely say, you fucking cunt to my flat tyre.
Well, I think that it gets a bit complex there because, you know, if you've got a flat tyre, then that's going to be a situation in which you're annoyed. And I think, you know, so people tend to be more tolerant of swearing in that sort of situation, you know, swearing out of exasperation. But if it's a sort of cool, calm, collected fuck in a polite context, like at a funeral or something like that, then it's... we all know that that's an inappropriate context. And so in that context, if you choose to swear, it's not merely that you're uttering a word that nobody really wants you to say in that context. You're kind of indicating your disrespect for the people around you by, you know, I know that you're not going to, that this word is going to shock you, but I'm saying it anyway, which is not something we get when we say something like, God, that meeting was torture or whatever.
But what I'm trying to get to is, why not? Why have we decided that torture is not a taboo, but, you know, a perfectly normal part of the human body, which half the population has and most of us came out of? Where has that come from? Do you know?
Yeah, well, I think there's a bit of randomness in it. Just some things are, some words that you would expect to be more shocking on paper aren't. I mean, this is an argument that the film director Ken Loach has made, because he's sort of, every time he makes a film, he's like in battle with the BBFC because they want to censor it because of the language. And he's made this point before. You know, he was arguing over whether one of his films should... He wanted the film to get a 15 certificate, and the BBFC said it had too many cunts, said it had to have an 18. And his argument was, you know, you got 15 certificates on films with violence and, you know, blood and guts, and then, and this is just a word. So there is, you know, there is some puzzling aspect of it, but I think it's to do with that conveying of disrespect. I mean,
do you think it's misogynistic? Because if you say someone's a dick, that's mild. If you say someone's a cunt, that's very heavy. And in America, you can't really say that. It'll be very... It's usually reserved for women, and people don't like hearing that word
when
at
Americans
all.
Americans hear cunt, they're very much like, ooh.
Ooh, yeah, absolutely. Whereas it's an interesting linguistic thing in Scotland.
Oh, they love it.
If you call someone... If a random stranger in a pub calls you a cunt, they're being chummy.
Yeah.
But if they call you pal, they're going to fight you.
Yeah. Yeah, I found out the hard way in Edinburgh.
Yeah, it's Southern England has a big issue with cunt. Yeah, I mean, there's the explanation for why cunt is much more offensive and shocking than cock. It's hard to it's hard to think of any explanation it doesn't involve misogyny. You know, the idea that women's bodies are regarded with more distaste than men's bodies. So yeah, I think. This makes it difficult, and you find feminists often fall into two camps. There's some people who think, like, this word is such, it's so oppressive, you know, it's so powerful and misogynistic that nobody should ever use it, which then kind of risks making a taboo even stronger, because that's how swear words work. And on the other hand, you get people saying, well, let's reclaim it. Let's just use it as often as we can, break down the taboo, people will care less about it, and it will kind of be on a par with cock, where you get, you know,
because I feel like, for example, the word bitch originally, like the 90s, I hardly ever heard it on TV, whereas nowadays you hear it quite a lot. Even I think I've even heard it before the Watershed, maybe once on Channel 4 offs, but it's more to do with like becoming normal and stuff like that. Whereas I feel like the word cunt is still something that you don't really hear on normal TV.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone else agrees with me with that.
Oh, yeah. You definitely, you'd probably, you. In fact, there's bit, they use the word bitch in Friends.
Yeah.
But obviously they would never use the C word in Friends. I don't know why I'm suddenly being coy about it. You can't, you can imagine, you know, Rachel saying, ah, oh, she's such a bitch. But you can't imagine Chandler saying, oh, you're such a cunt.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like it's just not a thing.
Yeah.
It would ever happen. What's your view on this? You know, you've written a book about it. What insights have you got about whether or not we should reclaim it or the argument for reclaiming it?
Yeah, well, I think we should. But it's also very difficult because, I mean, if you think about the way in which... people try to... So there's something called conscientious offence that involves sort of engaging in public displays of some behaviour that people have mistakenly found offensive in an attempt to get people to see that it's not really offensive. So examples might be, you know, if a mother gets harassed for breastfeeding, there might be like a nurse-in where a load of mothers get together and breastfeed in public. And you see similar things with like gay kissing protests. So the idea there is we're doing this thing in public and it's not offensive, and we hope that by putting on this act, you're going to rethink your attitude to it. But if you do that with cunt, it's trickier because, you know, things like kissing and breastfeeding are just not behaviours that people tend to engage in order to upset people, whereas cunt is.
Mm.
So I think it's kind of difficult that, you know, if you...
Yeah, you don't want to have a cunt protest. Like, we're just all out there shouting the C word.
Yeah, or, you know, if you just throw it into conversation, like thinking, OK, you know, I'm just going to use this in front of my boss just to try and break down the taboo.
I mean, someone would get fired.
No, he's not necessarily going to... He or she.
I'm not a feminist, but
I just said he for boss. But you can sort of try to break down the taboo around cunt by using it as often as you can, but the people you're talking to might not understand what you're doing. So there's that complicating factor. You would have to definitely unpack it, I think.
Yeah. Do you think it's to do as well with the environment that people are in? Like, we talk about different countries... When we're talking about America, they don't really appreciate it. Do you think in terms of the environment that people are in, do you think it's more offensive in certain places?
Yeah, I mean, we've mentioned the US, where it's sort of almost like a slur against women, meaning that, you know, if you use the term, then it's kind of like you're expressing contempt for women. It's that sort of word, whereas in the UK it's less like that, but it's a very offensive swear word. But, you know, in Scotland, we've already mentioned, in Ireland, in Wales, Northern England, even Australia, it's much more of a benign, well, not quite benign term, but it's much less offensive than it is in Surrey. And I think that gives some...
That speaks to Surrey more than cunt, though, doesn't it, really?
Yeah. I mean, but the fact that it's not always and everywhere offensive gives some hope that, you know, that it is possible to break down the taboo. I mean, it's interesting, you mentioned, Siggy, about whether certain words are used before the watershed. Because you reminded me that, I think I read in the BBC's guidelines about swearing, that it's something like in kids' programmes, you're not allowed to swear unless there's a very good reason. Mm. Which got me wondering what that
good reason would be.
I mean, get me on the BBC. I talk about my cousin all day, every day.
What about words like that we have reclaimed, like the slut walk, which is about reclaiming the word slut, whore, reclaiming, you know, I feel like those words in feminism, in fourth wave feminism, have become words where we go, yeah, you know, I embrace my inner slut or my outer slut, in fact.
Right.
You know, and I was reading in your book that you say that the word whore was offensive when sex workers, and still in many parts of society, but in spaces where sex workers are respected, the word whore, which is an old word for sex worker that was a slur, is like, well, yeah, you can call me a whore because I don't think that doing sex work is degrading.
Yeah.
And so that it's shifted by what we respect and what we don't respect. Is that the same as if we respected vaginas more, we would be less frightened of them and they'd be less harsh a swear word?
Yeah, it's a bit more abstract with cunt, isn't it? Because so with terms like whore and slut, you could get someone trying to use that as an insult, but then there's this sort of backdrop of, at least in sort of certain contexts, of like, do you really think you're going to insult me by implying that I have a lot of sex? You know, that the insult doesn't really have legs. You better try something else. Whereas I think, you know, calling someone a cunt, there's a meaning to that word, but if you use it as an insult, you're not literally calling someone a vagina. It's just a way of saying, I don't respect you and I want you to know about it.
Yeah, because those kind of words, especially if you're in the bedroom, I don't know why I'm using the bedroom, like I'm being prudish now, they will turn some people on and they will make them get to the point of climax quicker, but I feel like the word cunt is a bit more aggressive with it, and I'm trying to figure out how would I reclaim it, because I can't imagine calling Deborah a cunt.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I appreciate that. Is it so? You know, your thrust of why you want to talk about it. What are you hoping we do? Is it just about like rethinking it and examining it and holding it up into the light and asking why it's such a taboo?
Well, I think there's this whole network of feminist issues in swearing. I think so. You know, the offensiveness of the word cunt is one of them. There's, you know, sort of attitudes around, you know, swearing in front of women and children. The idea that sort of swearing is more shocking when women do it. I think these are all things that need to be challenged. And I think also it's not just a sort of interesting issue. It's a justice issue, I think, because, you know, in various parts of the world you can get, you can get arrested sometimes for swearing or fined. In broadcasting you can get censored and so on. And I think often these decisions are made in quite a knee-jerk way. So it's not based on an analysis of, like, let's look at exactly why saying this in this context is offensive. It's, you know, Ofcom going out, doing a survey, asking people, what do you find offensive? And then just taking people's often unreflective attitudes and sort of feeding those into the rules. And if those attitudes contain things like more shock at hearing a woman swear than hearing a man swear, then, I mean, I think it's a little bit more complicated than that. But, you know, if you kind of bake in those biases, then you're going to end up with things like women paying a higher price for swearing than men.
Interesting. Well, I very much recommend, I've really enjoyed reading your book. I very much recommend everybody read, For Fuck's Sake, Why Swearing is Shocking, Rude and Fun. Do you have anything to finish on in terms of why it's fun?
I don't think it is fun anymore. I'm quite bored with it. But I think
that's right. You do. You've got ADHD. You don't. You're bored of this now. But it says in the book. It's in the title of the book that it's fun.
Yeah, yeah. Lots of people who haven't spent 7 years writing a book about it probably
think it's fun.
My kids think it's fun. It
must be quite hard to be a mum when you've written that book and then your child says something, you go, don't talk like that, please. And they say, but mum, you're the author of For Fuck's Sake, Why Swearing is Shocking, Rude and Fun.
Well, my daughter told me, so my kids are 12 and 14, my daughter said that one of her teachers had said to her that, oh, isn't your brother proud of his mum? He's always talking about her book. And I thought, well, no, he just gets a free pass to say fuck every time he says a title. He's sort of constantly on
this
about
is a way of getting your children to talk about you when you're not there in glowing terms.
It's entirely engineered for that reason.
Excellent.
We should get you in the school.
Yeah. Is there any chance one of your children is my niece?
I'll ask them.
Yeah, ask them. Ask them. They might say yes. Well, listen, yeah, I learned a lot from it. And interestingly about, you know, appropriation, who can appropriate what, how we can throw a swear word out. And I think a lot of it is who's saying it and the tone. Tone is everything.
Yeah.
One of my godchildren's mums said, she said to her children, you can say, oh, we had a fucking brilliant day, and that doesn't hurt anybody. But you can say, are you wearing that? To another kid at school.
Right, that's, right, right.
No, it's nice. And you can really hurt their feelings. Yeah. And you've said lots of nice words. So she said, just be aware, if you swear a lot, other children's parents don't like it and they might not invite you over. So, and she just said, I just thought I needed to tell them the truth, which is these words are harmless unless they're missiles. They're used as missiles.
Yeah.
But also, in the wider world, there are taboos. And you might not get invited out as much if you're very sweary, because that is the truth when you're a child. Yeah. But she said, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. But if some people do, there might be a social cost. Yeah. And I thought that's a really good way of just saying to your kid, well, there might be a social cost. So if you want to go around being like, you know, mofo. even that, though, motherfucker, that's awful, really, isn't it, when you think about it?
It's quite American, though, isn't it? I'm not sure we haven't really got on board with that.
I'll sometimes say it if I stub my toe.
I can't get used to it. Even with, like, obviously, a lot of those kind of words are rap songs and rap music. And I remember my cousin just saying at one Christmas, bitch, don't kill my vibe. And she was four. And I was like... And I didn't know whether to laugh or cry.
Now, she is definitely my niece.
Yeah.
It's time to wrap up this section. So can I have an enormous round of applause for our very special guest, Rebecca Roche. And Sakisa. Recording engineer was Chris Sharp. The Guilty Feminist theme tune was composed by Mark Hodge. The producer was Tom Sinsky. For the Spotted Shop, thanks to Rachel Croft and Gina Dissier, Zainab Mohammed, and everyone at King's Place, as well as all of you for listening. For more information about this and other episodes, visit guiltyfeminist.com. Are you allowed to say who the rich man is? We can cut it out of the podcast. Who the wealthy gentleman is?
Well, he's not alive anymore, so maybe we'll just leave him to the side.
Right. Let's not speak ill of the dead.
Yes.
Yes. Because we would be speaking ill of him. Is that what you're implying? Look, we'll cut this part out. I think it's best that we cut this part out because Lauren likes her job. And at the moment, she's on course for a promotion. Because...
The Guilty Feminist is provided exclusively from Acast. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.